So we left off the previous year discussing concerning the prohibition of Bishlachim. So Chazal tell us that if the Jew participates in the Bishlam in some shape or form, so that's not considered to be Bishlachim. The other thing is we weren't exactly sure what shape or form means. So we had a big machlekes and Rishonim we left off with about whether Hadlochas Ha'esh suffices. Can the Jew simply light a fire and then disappear? Then the non-Jew comes and cooks up the entire food. Would that be acceptable or not? So the Svaidim were generally machmir, and the Shal Shukhrah quotes the machmir, and the Shal and the Ramah quotes the Mekilim, the Ashkenazim. So our practice is generally lahokal. Most of our food establishments, so we assume like the Mekilim, and therefore we have the Mashkiach comes in, lights the fire, turns on the pilot or something, and then all the cooking gets end up being done by the non-Jews. So I think we left hanging is that, what do Achenu HaSvaidim do? What are they supposed to do about this? So there were two different approaches to this. So three different approaches to this. There are some who just ignored it, just said, okay, when an Ashkenazim, Ashkenazim, some who did that, we're not justifying or not. Then there are those who said, well, we can't help you, sorry, there's nothing we can do about it. So in Ochanam, that the Sfadim should not be eating the food in our establishments. It's also a very, very difficult position to follow today. So there's a little bit of a middle ground that was suggested by Rav Avadya Yosef. So Rav Avadya wanted to be Malamit Chus, and all the Sfadim today, who in America end up being Mekil, of the Ashkenazi Kula, based on the following, that he thinks maybe it qualifies as a Sfake Sfaker. This is part of a very, very common theme in Rav Avadya's Svarim. Rav Avadya was very, very big into combining shittas together. Some shittas say it's but for this reason, and some say it's but for this reason, and collect the two, and almost focus on it as a snake maker. So Rav Avadya says that he thinks that a Svarim would have the right to be makel based on a double doubt. He says that first of all, let's not forget, going all the way back to the first day of the Shia, so we mentioned there's one opinion in the Rishonim that says that Bishlachim doesn't apply in a Jewish home. It doesn't apply in a Jewish establishment. It only applies if you're going to your non-Jewish neighbor, you're going to become friendly with him, but he's coming to your house to work. That's not considered to be a Bishlachim altogether. Now, we don't generally follow that. The Rabbi Natam discounted that view, but it's still Shita. So Shukhanach mentions and says, somebody held that way. One of the Balaitas held that way. So Mavadja says that that's one suffering. At the end of the day, it's still suffering. It's Fekal and Afka. And what's the second suffering? So Mavadja writes, Kedaka Bakurdish. Maybe it's mutter because it's a Jewish home. Vimtum Tzalom Adai Kul is not right. Maybe there's a chance, possibly the Ashkenazim are right. The Suffolk is giving you, he'll make it into a smeg smegger. So therefore he says, any Sfaradi wants to eat in at a regular Ashkenazi wedding, a regular Ashkenazi restaurant or something, has a right to rely on just a shtickle smeg smegger. It would be preferable if the Sfaradi wouldn't have to rely on this, if they can ensure that the food is actually cooked by a Jew proper. In Eretz Yisrael, obviously, this is significantly easier. In America, this is obviously much harder. So there are some restaurants that will accommodate you. That if you have certain restaurants that have a high proportion of Sfaradim who live there, so they sometimes have a setup that they'll let you go actually into the back and flip your own burgers or something, make your own food. So I'm not mistaken, I think Grill Point in Queens, if you take a look in Kew Gardens Hills, I'm not mistaken, there are a lot of Sfaradim, a lot of Bukharians there, so I think they have a system that if you go into the back, they'll let you do it. It kind of depends what the restaurant is. If you have a burger joint, there's one thing to let you flip a burger. On the other hand, if you're going to go in for some major, major event out there with the chef with his big white hat, and went to chef school for 20 years, loved off because he let the yeshivish Sfaradi guy go in and start playing with the food. So yesh, but whatever, those who rely on the Mekilim, so there's definitely what to rely on.
Don't the Sfaradi hechshers incorporate it?
Yeah, but there aren't too many Sfaradi hechshers in America.
No, but like in,
Maybe a deal. Maybe the Jersey Shore Ravenet, maybe they have probably will not. I can't tell you what their policy is.
And also, don't they have, especially meat reputation of Mashkiach, don't they have the
Mashkiach
that you can ask?
No, usually what happens is that the Mashkiach turns on the fires in the morning and then all the cooking gets done during the rest of the day. So you're not going to have the Mashkiach is checking vegetables the rest of the day. He's doing checking invoices the rest of the day. He's davening mincha, whatever he's doing the rest of the day. But he's not sitting around. There's always that. It's always the famous word, Where's the Mashkiach? He's davening mincha. Mincha for Yom Kippur. Muslim for Yom Kippur. A little more than mincha. Okay. So back to the story. This idea that having a Jew participate partially in the cooking, so this also becomes a question, just how far we could stretch this. I don't remember, did we talk about the bulbs? I don't remember, we didn't mention about the bulbs, we didn't mention about the phones, right? We mentioned the phones. Oh, okay, so I forgot about the high-tech version of what it means to have Jews participate a little bit in the bishul. So there is a machlokes in the Rishonim, even a niach that halachas ha'esh works, how much of halachas ha'esh is halachas ha'esh? Let's say, for example, the non-Jew literally lit the fire, and the non-Jew cooked the food, did everything. So what did the Jew do? The Jew threw what's called hashlochas kisem. Tosfos in Masechet Avodah quotes an opinion that he threw a kisem, means like a little splinter of wood. A Jew comes and throws a little splinter of wood into the big, 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 you know, fire that the non-Jew cooked. Is that also called a bishul Yisrael? So there was some Rishonim say, yeah, that's also good enough. The whole thing is for a hekeh b'yalma. So the Rambam writes, the whole goal is just to create a little bit of a hekeh. The Rambam says by pas, not by bishul. It means it's that's also sufficient. And Tosfos quotes other Rishonim who say kisem zeh lo malach lo meirid. Just having a little splinter of wood thrown into a bonfire that the non-Jew cooked, that's garnish. That's dvarim b'teilim. So according to the Mekilim on that, there are Mekilim on that one also, so then maybe we could have as follows, maybe we could have a setup that the Jew is always participating a little bit, a tiny bit with the bishul. He's adding a mashu of a mashu. How is this? So this kula usually plays out more in terms of Pasach, and we'll talk about this a little bit later. We're much more lenient about Pasach and Shailas, but in theory it's the same Shailah when it comes to bishul, namely, fundamentally, the non-Jew turns on everything. So you have this big oven, and the non-Jew is doing everything. But the Jew did a hashlochas kisem. What was the kisem? They put in a bulb into the oven 30 years ago, and the bulb gives off a minuscule amount of heat, about as much heat as the hashlochas kisem does. So in theory, that bulb is helping in the cooking process. So could that also count as a bishul Yisrael? So we rely on that sometimes when it comes to Pasach. Again, we'll talk a little bit more about it later on. That would be a modern, you know, innovation of this idea. We're trying to push the limit as far as we can in terms of what's considered to be a bishul Yisrael. There is another shaila.
Make a difference when, like, is there
let's say that's an food already makal by your son. Oh, we can talk about that afterwards. Okay, we can talk about that afterwards. So in the case of these bulbs, the bulbs are put in from Dairy Dairies when the oven is installed. So the Jew screws in the light bulb, and then that light bulb, it's not a regular, you know, Home Depot light bulb. It's a special light bulb.
Coming in, like, participating in the cooking process. Something
is already... Okay, so we're going to get that. That's going to be the next part of the shayla. Very. There's another potential way to make it bishul Yisrael without the Jew even being there. You know, one of the biggest challenges of having bishul Yisrael, when a lot of the cooking and stuff is done in the wee hours of the morning, and the mashgiach is not necessarily interested in being there at 4 o'clock in the morning. Maybe he should be there for other reasons than 4 o'clock in the morning. That's maybe a whole other loaded question, but not for now. So what if you have situations where the mashgiach is nowhere near the place, but maybe you could do it all remote. So maybe you could have a mashgiach who's sitting in Yerushalayim, and he presses a button on his phone, and the phone sends out a signal, and it turns on a stove, it turns on an oven in the middle of Wyoming. So maybe that's also considered to be Bishul Yisrael. So again, these are all modern-day shailas, modern-day applications of this notion that it's enough to have a little bit of Yisrael, a little bit of Mashu. Again, this whole thing is a heck of b'yalma. Min HaTorah, none of this is the problem. It's all Chumrah midrabbana. The Yisra midrabbana was, we want to make it clear that there's a little bit of a demarcation. So Chazal were very, very lenient as to what's considered to make that demarcation. So again, these are contemporary shahs that the Hashkacha organization discuss, whether we're willing to accept the phone situation, whether we're willing to accept the light situation. These are potentially issues that are still being kind of fleshed out in the Hashkacha's Bizman Hazat. But Eir Beis raised a very important question in terms of when we talk about a Jew participating in the bishul, what stage of the game are we talking about? So up to now we've been talking about at the early bishul stage, namely the Jew is either literally putting the food into the oven, or the Jew is stirring the coals or lighting the fire, whatever he's doing pre the food is cooked. What if the food was already cooked? Now, how cooked was it? If it was totally, completely cooked, and now the Jew wakes up and says, by golly, it was cooked by a goy, what can I do about it? Throw it to the garbage. You can't do anything with it. You can feed it to the non-Jews. But if the food was not yet fully cooked, and now the Jew jumps in and decides to save the day and to try to complete the bishul process, will that do the trick or not? So there's a little bit of a different twist in the shaila. Before we were talking about starting off the bishul, Jew and non-Jew together. Now we're talking about the non-Jew did everything. 99% is done already, and now the Jew wants to put the final touches on it. Do we reach a point when it's too late and say, sorry, the food is already cooked, and whatever the Jew is going to do from here on in is really a meaningless? So this was a major machlokes in the Rishonim, that the Rashba was of the opinion that there is a line of demarcation, there is a point of no return, and that is the point of Meichel Ben Dusoy. That's the famous Gemara that tells us that if you cook food to the point of Meichel Ben Dusoy on Shabbos, you're chayav. What is Meichel Ben Dusoy? So Ben Dusoy was the famous Ganav in the days of Chazal, that he was always on the run. He never wanted to be caught, so he would always barbecue his meat very, very quickly. He didn't have either a half or a third way. It's a question that we showed him exactly how much he roasted his meat. But he definitely didn't sit around and have it simmer on the flame for very long. So the Gemara says that idea, Ma'echa Ben Yusoy, is what's called Nechla Dehatchak. From the fact, it's not that there's any special halacha we're saying about Ben Yusoy, he wasn't such a holy man, but he was indicative, that mindset was indicative, that the food's edible. If the food's mamish raw, so Mishugoyim, nobody eats raw meat. I mean, one crazy person eats raw meat, but if you have a ready, that's part of the culture, that people understand that this is edible, b'shas adchak, so that's already called Ma'echam Ben Yusoy, and that's called Bishul in halacha. Therefore, if you take a raw piece of food on Shabbos and you cook it to that stage, you're being Nechal adchak, a third or half cooked, that would be a nisa d'orais. That's an explicit Gemara. So the Rashba says that you see from that Gemara, you see from that Din Hilchos Shabbos that the line of Bishul is Ma'echam Ben Yusoy. So therefore, if the non-Jew cooked it to the point of Ma'echam Ben Yusoy, the game's over. So halachically, that's called cook. The fact that the Jew is going to put the final touches on, the final touch, that's like heating the food, that's like reading the food, that's not called cooking the food. So anything done, any Jewish participation pre-Ma'echam Ben Yusoy is acceptable, says the Rashba. Post Ma'echam Ben Yusoy, it's already too late.
And does it go the same the other direction? That if a non-Jew cooked it?
Right. If the Jew cooked it to Ma'echam Ben Yusoy, then the Goy puts it on, that would be fine. Right. That would for sure be good. Right. So according to the Rashba, there's one line in the sand, and that's Ma'echam Ben Yusoy. Ben Lekul Ben Lechum. So the Rosh in Maseches Sefer Yetzirah quotes the Rashba and disagrees with the Rashba. The Rosh and the Rashba were colleagues to one another. When the Rosh ran away from Germany and came to Spain, so the Rashba got him a job in Toledo. The Rashba was the Rav of Barcelona, and the Rosh became the Rav in Toledo. So they overlapped with each other. So the Rosh quotes this Rashba and says he doesn't think it's correct. He says that he thinks that he's being too machmir in Hilchos Bishalachim. Bishalachim Sham Lahokal, says the Rosh. Just because in Hilchos Shabbos we find that Ma'echam Ben Yusoy is the cutoff for Bishul, we don't have to extrapolate from Bishul B'Shabbos to Bishul Akam. Bishul Akam, it's always okay. As long as the food's not totally fully cooked. If the food's totally edible, gamrei, and then the Jew just puts it back into the oven, that's meaningless. But as long as the full food needs a little bit more cooking, that's still considered to be a Bishul Yisrael. That's what the Rosh says. So the truth is that one could argue with the Rashba, even not invoking that image of the kula, of the Rosh. The Rosh had to invoke the idea that Bishul Akam is different from Bishul Shabbos. One could argue that maybe the Rashba's model is correct. The Bishul B'Shabbos and Bishul Akam are identical and still not go down the Rashba's route for the following reason. There's a big machlekes in the Rishonim about the principle in Hilchos Shabbos called Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. We all know Klal Gadol in Hilchos Bishul called Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. Everyone agrees, almost everyone agrees. Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. Once food is cooked, so there's no Isser Bishul Min HaTorah afterwards. It's interesting that phrase, Ein Bishul Acha Bishul, appears nowhere in Chazal. It's not a Gemara B'Chalal. It's a statement in the Rishonim explaining a certain sugya in Masechet Shabbos. There's a sugya in Masechet Shabbos that 99% sure says that principle, and the Rishonim coined the phrase, Ein Bishul Acha Bishul, based on that sugya in the end of Masechet Shabbos. So there's a big machlekes in Rishonim, at what point do we say Ein Bishul Acha Bishul? How mevushal does something have to be in order to invoke the sugya of Ein Bishul Acha Bishul? So the Rashba, not surprisingly, says in Masechet Shabbos, Ma'echam Ben Yusoy, that once, let's say, Reuven takes a piece of raw meat and cooks it to Ma'echam Ben Yusoy, and then Shimon cooks it subsequently, that's nothing. Min HaTorah, that's garnish. Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. Ma'echam Ben Yusoy is the kaveh, that is the line that determines Bishul, Bein lahokal, bein lahachm, bein b'shabbos, bein b'shalach, bein b'chalosh, whatever. That is the law and finished. And the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam Hilchos Shabbos writes, no. If you cook raw food to Ma'echam Ben Yusoy, you're chayev. And then if the next guy cooks it subsequently further, he's also chayev. Ma'echam Ben Yusoy just means that that's the earliest time to be of a bishul. But that's not the end of the game. You know when bishul ends according to the Rambam? When it's nisbashul, kotzarchon, when it's totally edible, not just edible, idea chah. When it's totally 100% completely edible, that's the end of the Bishul process. According to the Rambam, that would be a great kula for us for Bishul Akam, that if the non-Jew cooks it to Ma'echam Ben Yusoy, of course the Jew could finish it up. Because even in Hilchos Shabbos, what the Jew is doing is significant. So we have really three opinions in the Rishonim. What is that take on the Shabbos? The Shabbos really happens. You made a mistake, the non-Jew starts to cook the food, you walk in and say, Gavald, Geschwigen, the non-Jew's cooking the food, Gavald, we got to save the day. So the Jew runs in and takes the food off the fire and throws it back onto the fire again. And now the question is, how far did it reach? I did the Bishul of the non-Jew. So according to the Rashi, if it reached Meichel ben Drusoy, the game is over. So straight, finished, it's over. You can't fix it afterwards. According to the Rashi, you could fix it afterwards because of the kul of Bishalachom. And according to the Rambam, you could possibly fix it afterwards, not because of the kul of Bishalachom, you could fix it because that's Bishul. That means that's Bishul HaMom B'Torah. That's still considered to be a Maisa Bishul. Is it? Maybe we just get this to... Is anyone else? Very woman here, just me. No? Okay. Just get a little, maybe just talking too much Bishul gets us. No, that's fine, it's fine. One window doesn't appear.
Does it matter if there's a cooking process that went out of fire?
Oh, okay, we're going to get to those afterwards. We have a whole other picture about that. Okay, we're going to get to that in a second. So how should we paskin the halacha on the shayla? Should we paskin like the Rashba's chumra? Should we paskin like the Rashba's kula? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us that it's preferable to be machmer on this. But the Shulchan Aruch says if you're really, really stuck, it's a terrible Shabbos, you're a guest, and you just realize all the food is going to be thrown out. So yesh makom lahakil. And the Rambam writes, we're more makel than that. The Rambam writes, we're makel outright, like the Rush and finished. Rambam, we assume the halacha that as long as the Jew puts the final touches on it, that would be acceptable. I once had the shayla about a food that probably wasn't Bishulachim anyway. But I remember we lived in Paramus, so we had a babysitter who used to like plantains. You know what the plantains are? They look like fat bananas, except there's a big difference between them. You can't eat them raw. So she used to love them. We used to bring them from the store and cook them. So the rule in the house was she wasn't allowed to turn on the fire for anything. It's a low plug. Once they start turning on the fire, you're asking for trouble. So if whatever it was a mix-up or something, I had to see what the fire was on. I came home and I realized that there were these plantains cooking and that she had turned on the fire by mistake. So the question is, what does it have to do with me? Well, we'll see in a minute. It was in my pots, so that becomes a potential shah. So the truth is, I don't really think there's bishalachim on the plantains anyway, because it's not oilah shulchan balachim. It depends where you live. If you live in Paramus, it's probably not. If you live in maybe in South America, maybe they are oilah shulchan. I don't know what they serve them at weddings. But in Paramus, probably most people don't eat them in a fancy meal. So then I don't think they're really a problem. Mikra didn't think they were a problem anyway. But I got a little bit, concerned. So I asked her one question. Oh, it's so nice. How are the plantains doing? I looked at her and said, oh, are they ready yet? So she takes a look and says, no, they're almost ready. Not yet. Not totally ready yet. So, oh, great. Okay, good. So I shifted off the pot off the fire for a second, moved it back on, or turned off the fire. I forgot, but either turned off the fire, turned around, make a new bais avishal on it, and sure, and then it's butter, because once it's not fully edible yet, so then that would technically be considered to be avishal Yisrael, so that could salvage, that could save the day. It's a strange thing. Ramesh has an interesting raya from this sugya. He says, what would it then be? Let's say the non-Jew cooked it a third of the way, and then you stopped, you took it off the fire, and you started to eat it. That would be bishalachim. And so you have something that was nesa mishum bishalachim, and then if the Jew goes ahead and puts the final touches on it, it becomes ois bishalachim. It's a mudna thing. You could take something that's osa mishum bishalachim and be mevatel the shame. That's a very strange concept. In Hilchos Kashrus, you usually don't find that. If something's treif, it remains treif. So we said, yeah, it's Ramosha. You see that kula built into Hilchos Bishalachim. So Ramosha used that kula for bagels. There's a whole discussion we'll talk about a little bit later on. Hopefully, we'll talk about Pasachim. So it was the shadow the post can raise about whether bagels are an issue of Bishalachim. Because when the non-Jew pours the boiling water, the bagels are made in two stages. First, they cook up the flour, and then they put the flour into the oven. So when the non-Jew poured the boiling water onto the flour, so that was bishul on the flour. So we have all kind of coolers about pasak and paspalt and maislach and stories, but bishul, there are no coolers. So maybe we should, all the bagels are treif because of bishulachim. So Ramosha says, no, that even though it could be they were bishulachim already, but once they're rebaked, so then they turn it to pasakim. And pasakim is maker than mutter, when as long as it's a professional baker. So Ramosha asks at himself, what do you mean? How does magic happen? How can something go from being asa to being mutter? So he says, what do you mean? It was sugi b'feirish. And come on, this din of going from if it cooked to a third, so we paskin, halacha, there are more paskins, that the goy cooked it, it's taka treif, but if the Jew grabs it afterwards and continues the cooking, then it becomes a chazal hatero. So you see this quirk, you know, then it's okay. Ramesh has another cooler when it comes to bagels. He says the bagels are not edible when they're in that mush state of cooked water and flour together. It's not really edible anyway, so he wasn't too concerned about it altogether. But before they told him that the bagels aren't edible, Ramesh was still matre based on this lumnus. Anyway, so the bottom line is that it's very, very important when you're dealing with bishalachim that you try to make sure that the Jew is involved in some shape or form somewhere along the way.
Is it completely subjective?
What do you mean in terms of?
Meaning, in some shape, like, hey, someone's machmir on Pasach, I want to toast the bagel now.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's a loaded question. At what point do we say something is legamri, nechel? I think the answer to that question is it nechel? I mean, the bottom line is you would eat bread, not toasted. I think everyone in the room here would lemaise eat bread that's not toasted. I don't think you would say that bread not toasted is nechel that chak. You would say I may like toasted as a little added bonus, but I don't. It's hard to say that's called dechal de'atchach. I think that's probably the hagdara. This has been a little touchy topic in terms of some of the wraps and stuff that some of the caterers and restaurants like to use these wraps. So all of a sudden, during Seder Meshuva, all the restaurants start to get nervous. All the restaurants that advertise all year long to Pas Yisrael, but they still want to serve these wraps. And for some reason that I don't want to say why, but apparently some of the Mohamish wraps are maybe not the ones they want to use. So they want to use the regular wraps, and they always want to rely on the following kula, that they're going to, they throw the wrap, toast it up a little bit, they get a little bit of a kick or something, hocus pocus, that's called Bishul Yisrael. So the response has been, at least the RCBC response has been, it's yesh v'yesh. It depends. If the wrap is mamish edible the way it is, everybody would eat the wrap. But if you're going to play a game like haram, you're going to throw it into the oven, so that way you could put Pas Yisrael on, so now you can attract all the dates from Lakewood and tell everyone that you're Pas Yisrael. So I don't think that's acceptable. Some of the foods, not the wrap, some of the other kinds of foods are really not so great. Like you can tell that they really don't taste so great until you give them that final push a little bit. So those are a little bit more megalon. So again, any establishment, at least here, it's advertising Pas Yisrael, so we're insisting that those kinds of foods be honestly not really as good edible as they could be, and then only then we'll let just the touch-up job and call that a Pas Yisrael. So it does get a little bit tricky. How do you define that? Okay, anyway. When we speak about Bishalakum, so one of the big issues that we have at Bishalakum is factories. We've been talking mostly about our catering establishments, restaurants, our own homes, but factories pose a potentially serious problem of Bishalakum. So there are a few different approaches, a few different issues that all kind of, come together to a head when we discuss food that's manufactured in factories. So one issue is that maybe we could just kind of hide behind the general klal of Ein Ol Shulchan Malachim. Whenever you're dealing with canned foods, so that's a loaded question. Is canned tuna fish, is that considered to be Ol Shulchan Malachim? So we mentioned this a little bit in the past. Is that called Ol Shulchan Malachim? On the one hand, tuna fish is Ol Shulchan Malachim. They're not canned tuna fish. They don't serve canned tuna fish at the White House. They don't serve it at the state dinners for anybody. They don't serve canned tuna fish. So that's a question. Can we just say, well, it's in Ol Shulchan Malachim and finish in Gemara? So that was a big question. Do you really follow each particular preparation of the food? Is it more of a general? The min is in Ol Shulchan Malachim. That was one shaila. Then there was another kula when it came to factors, a suggestion Rabbi Moshe had. This is a throwback also when we started off the first shia. We mentioned that the Rishonim raised the question, does Bishalachim apply in a situation where the reason clearly doesn't apply? There's no chastas here. No one's marrying anybody over here. We saw some Rishonim raise the question, what if the person who's cooking is the priest in town? He doesn't have, took a vow of celibacy, he's not having any children. So is the Bishalachim in his food? So the Rishonim talk mamash about that. And the Rishonim say, nah, come on, Joe, come on, it's a low plug. You say, it would be a strange thing. The priest, you're allowed to eat his food. Nobody else is. It's a little bit of a mandapsak. So it's a low plug. Chazal said, even though he doesn't have any children, it's okay. It's still a problem. Then we had some Rishonim who raised the question, what if it's a worker? It's not a friend, not a social contact. It's not an employee for you. You're not going to marry them. So some Rishonim wanted to be making on that, and we didn't really like that either. Most of the Rishonim didn't like that. But you see, you begin to chisel away when you have a situation where the reason doesn't apply so much. Then we had the issue of palta. Pas palta is something that comes up by pasachim, which we still haven't really got to. When you have, it's a professional baker. So professional, I know the baker very well, but it's a baker, he's a baker, he's the baker in town. He's not my friend, I'm not eating, going to his house for a piece of cake. He's selling me some cake in the store. So by Pasachim, that's okay, but Bishalachim, that doesn't work. So Ramosha said, what if we can go one step further? He's not the priest, he's not the babysitter, he's not the baker. He is somebody out in the middle of Nebraska who's producing some canned food for you. In a million years, you will never find out who the person is. It's not shy. Forget about having a relationship with the guy who's pressing the button in the canning factory. You'll never track him down in a million years anyway. So Moshe said, under these circumstances, it's so far removed from any shaychas of chasdas, maybe that we could be makelon. But then Rav Moshe asked the two bad words, saloi plug. We do find that there's a low plug. We have low plug on the priest, a low plug on the worker, and low plug on the and everybody. So why does the press of the button not include in the low plug? So Rav Moshe said, low plug means when the action that's being done is fundamentally the same action. The non-Jew priest is cooking you the same food as the non-Jewish neighbor. The non-Jewish babysitter is cooking the same way that the non-Jewish potential friend is. Over here, the cooking in the factory is being done in such a different way. When they cook things in a factory, they're not taking a piece of tuna fish and putting it into a frying pan and cooking it. That's not what's happening. There's this humongous, giant machinery. Somebody's pressing a button somewhere, and these massive, bishul enterprises are taking place that is so radically different from the little cooking by a next-door non-Jewish neighbor that there's no connection living or dead between those two. And that's not even a loplo. It's Rav Moshe's chiddush and gabi chiddush. So Rav Moshe says that even though we don't generally accept these kulas in Mishalachim, we're very into loplugs in Mishalachim, but yesh gvul b'dover, reach a certain point, even we're willing to say, ad kan v'lo yeser, and therefore the factories would be mutter. So that's another tzad. So Rav Moshe said it as a tzad. I don't know if he said it like totally 100% convinced, but he said it as a possibility, a tzad, a possibility, yesh lachol. Then there was a third fact that was thrown into the mix in terms of the factories, and that's the very process itself. That the way the food is cooked, let's say tuna fish is cooked, it's not cooked in a pot, it's not cooked in an oven, it's cooked what we call steaming. So there's a whole, again, I don't know too much about the canning process, but the food is in the cans already, and then the cans are exposed to this high, heavy-duty steam, and that cooks up the food. So is that bishul altogether? So that touched a little bit on Josh's question. It's not really, you're not really cooking. It's not cooking in the fire. It's cooking with the steam that's coming out from some kind of a device. Is that called cooking? So some poskim raised an issue. Maybe that should be excluded from bishul akum based on a Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi is a shayla, a ushan mai. Shami talks about what would be the din if you cook with smoke. And instead of cooking mamish in the fire, you cook with, are the fishes like that? No? Yeah. Smoke? Yeah. Isn't lox that?
Yeah.
Okay, so you cook with the smoke rather than the fire itself. So is that considered to be bishul or not? So the Rishami raised the shayla, and Rishami says, Torchi. We don't know. Safik grant you what the din is. So Shulchan Aruch writes, bishul akum is only drabbanim. So Safik drabbanim lakula. So ma'ushin is going to be mutter. So some later poskim said, oh, ma'ushin is mutter. You see that kozman, you're not cooking with the fire proper. Everything's okay. So what did Nami steaming is all right also. And others were not so sure. Others questioned whether cooking with smoke, so the food tastes differently. It's called smoked. So maybe that's considered to be a different process. Maybe cooking with steam is just the same as cooking with the regular fire. So the later poskim are not sure. So because of all these studim lahakel, therefore the many hashgacha organizations have taken the practice, we have a lot of studim lahakel, therefore we have a right to make them. B'shalachim said drabon anyway. So b'tzir of the fact that the tuna fish is probably not oil shulchan b'lachim anyway, and the fact that according to Rav Moshe, it's so far removed, you'll never track down who the guy is. And the fact that we're not even sure that there's a bishul altogether, when you put all the factors together, so it's probably a yesh makom hakol. So I think that was the opinion that was taken, I think it's still taken by many of the hashgacha organizations that we rely on, that we're not running around having the Jew pressing all the buttons to make sure everything is bishul yisrael in some of these factories. Some of the Hamisher brands that will advertise that they're bishul yisrael, so they are having, again, how they're doing it, is the Jew actually there, are they doing using phones, and I can't tell you, I don't know. But many of us are makel that none of this is really necessary, a combination of all these different factors. This idea that cooking without flame, without fire, is not considered to be bishul akum, this is probably most important for us, the application of microwaves. Are microwaves subject to bishul akum altogether? This is a loaded question. Again, if the non-Jew is simply heating up food in the microwave, that's not a problem. Again, the non-Jew can heat up food in the oven also, that wouldn't be a problem. But if the food is actually being cooked in the microwave, so would that pose a problem? Again, a lot of foods that are cooked in microwaves are not bishul akum for other reasons. If a non-Jew heats up water for you in the microwave, that's nechuk moshu chai. If you have other kinds of foods that you can eat raw, foods that are very cheapy kinds of foods, so there wouldn't be a problem anyway. But if a non-Jew makes eggs for you in the microwave, makes other things in microwaves that would be subject to bishul akum, is a microwave per se considered to be a problem or not? So this is probably part of an age-old question about what our take on microwaves in general is. This is a throwback to the early years of microwaves, where Moshe had his original tshuva about microwaves. Moshe Kedaka B'Kodesh, whenever there was an English word, so he never gave you the modern Hebrew translation of it. He just spelled it out like you're writing Ksuba in Yiddish. So he writes microwave. So it was Mem Yud Yud Kuf Reish Vav Vav. That's microwave. Rav Moshe speaks about cars, so he writes Kuf Alf Reish Samach, cars. He writes about machines, Mem Alf Shin Yud Nun. That's what Rav Moshe thought, like in Yiddish. So he has this famous tshuva about microwaves. I don't remember the exact date of the tshuva. I think the microwave technology, you can check me on this one, I think was developed in World War II. Am I correct? It was around then, in the 1940s. It didn't make it to the home till then, but I don't know. Anyone know about that information? Okay. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was developed around then, but it was not a reality in the American home till obviously much later. So Rav Moshe writes in the early years of microwaves, when they asked him, would there be a problem with Bishul B'Shabbos in a microwave? Again, we're not permitting microwaves on Shabbos for other reasons. There are electricity, other very serious Hilchos Shabbos concerns. But just from the pure vantage point of Bishul, so Rav Moshe writes that microwaves are probably equivalent to Bishul B'Chama, because the Mishnah says in Masechet Shabbos that if you cook in the sun, so that's not really considered to be Bishul on Shabbos. Sometimes it's the Rabbanan, sometimes it's not even the Rabbanan, but Bishul with Shabbos, Minatar, for sure it's not. So Rav Moshe writes, so microwaves are probably the same as cooking in the sun. The only thing is, he says, if you look at Rashi and the Sugya, Rashi seems to say the reason why Bishul B'Chama is not a Deraisa is because Ein Derech Bishul B'Kach. And therefore, if that changes, if it becomes Derech Bishul, then it will become a deraisa. So Moshe writes right now, I don't know, he's writing the tshuva around the 1950s or so, he says, right now, Echad Min Yalef has a microwave, so microwaves are not normal. But he says, you know, it's very possible. It looks like a pretty good, convenient machine to have. So he's guessing that someday, maybe even to the lower side, maybe the microwaves will make their way. So by the time it becomes normal and everyone's using microwaves, so then it could be they'll become Mamish Bishul Deraisa. That was Ramosha's approach to microwaves. So Shlomo Zalman disagreed with Ramosha in Hilchos Shabbos. Shlomo Zalman says microwaves cannot be Deraisa. Electricity are different, it's a different problem. But you can't call it Bishul Deraisa, because Shlomo Zalman understood that Bishul B'Chama is just not called Bishul. End of discussion. Not because it's not normal, not because it isn't. It's just that Kach Nemar Halacha, that the word Bishul in Halacha always means kind of the image of having a flame, having a fire. So therefore, Shlomo Zalman said that it's inconceivable that microwave should ever be a deraisa of Bishul. So l'chora, that machloikis, Rav Moshe, Shlomo Zalman should have some serious ramifications in terms of Bishul Acham. The Gemara seems to say that the rules of Bishul, Shabbos, and Bishul Acham are related, even if not 100%, but it's definitely related to one another. So one could argue that according to Rav Moshe, microwaves are totally normal today. So if a non-Jew cooks you something in a microwave, cooks eggs in a microwave, that's a big problem. If according to Shlomo Zalman, if the non-Jew cooks the eggs in the microwave, it should be okay. That's what l'chora the din should be. So as a sefer in Hilchos Bishul Acham, it's sefer Chelkos Bin Yomin. It was written by Rav Cohen's son. Rav Cohen wrote the famous svar in Badi HaShulchan on Hilchos Nida, on Hilchos Kashas. So on the Hilchos Bishul Acham, his son, he finished, so his son took over the Bishul Acham part. So in that sefer, he writes what I would have said. Also, he says that he thinks that whether or not there's Bishul Acham on microwaves, mamash depends on the shaila. According to Rav Moshe, yeah. According to Rav Shlomo Zalman, no.
Even according to Rav Moshe, can you say that microwaves are
a king of all shaila? Well, it depends. Let's say you're making eggs in a microwave. Does it really look different than any other eggs?
I don't know.
I'm not holding. I don't know. I mean, that's also part of the loaded question, but Eretz Yisrael Melachim refers to each species or refers to the way you're preparing it. That's part of the tuna fish shaila and the cans. But so according to Rav Moshe, we can open up the possibility. According to Shlomo Zalman, I thought it was a no-brainer. Of course, there's no Bishul Acham. The problem is that one of the Rabbanim in Bergen County told us that he actually spoke to Shlomo Zalman about this. And he asked Shlomo Zalman about, is the Bishul Acham microwaves? He told him yes. So I don't know how to make sense of that story. I'm not sure what to do with that story. So that's when we get a little bit weary before we make it on the mic. I'm not sure. I know there are some rabbanim who still insist that doesn't matter in the stories. And again, it's archi, and I'm not sure what to do about that piece of information. I know that for years, this was an issue in the Dunkin' Donuts. There used to be a machloikis in the different Dunkin' Donuts, whether there was a problem of just walking to the Dunkin' Donuts, having the non-Jew press the button and cooking up the eggs for you. So there used to be a slip sock between the Dunkin' Donuts in Teaneck and Dunkin' Donuts in the Five Towns. So for several years, there used to be a sign, there may still be, in the Five Towns, is there a sign there to press your own button? There used to be a sign in Dunkin' Donuts in the Five Towns that if you want eggs, so please ask the guy behind the counter if you can come over and just press the button. Because they would.
Because they do it in the microwave.
No, I'm saying so. And they were choshesh. They were choshesh for that maybe there's a Bishul Acham problem. Whereas the eggs and T-necks, so they're also making them in the microwave. So they were assuming like the supposed Rosh Hashanah version before the story happened.
I think they pre-cooked.
Wait, hold on, again. This was back in the Friedrich Adairis, when eggs were eggs, you know. Now the way the story goes is that whatever they're putting into that microwave right now was not as that Eilal Shulchan Malachim. We're not even sure whether after it's cooked, it's Eilal, whether it's Rela Chila or not. So it's some kind of a pre-mix or something or other. So there's probably significantly more grounds local on that. So I don't know. You check next time in the Five Towns Dunkin' Donuts. You can take a look whether the sign is still there. But to the best of my knowledge, the one in Tidik is not there. It's not under the RCBC anyway. Dunkin' Donuts is not our responsibility. But with him calls, I don't think that there's any sign there. Okay.
Right.
Talks about that on Shabbos.
Right.
It does the Bishul B'chama. Right. Yeah, it could be it's already called Nechal. Once it's already Nechal, like you date the Jew.
So
that's the sugya about when the Jew does the salting and then the guy takes the salted fish and recooks them. I forgot about it. I don't remember anymore. There's one last issue. It could be the most important issue in terms of Bishul Acham. If a mistake happens in Bishul Acham, something got messed up, and now your pot just got food cooked in Bishul Acham, your silverware just got Bishul Acham in it. So now what? Does Bishul Acham treif up kalim or not? So that's a loaded question. That's a big machlekes Rishonim. It's a conceptual machlekes. Some Rishonim say, of course, it treifs up kalim. It's treif. Eilu dvarim shel of the chaminality. Now that it's a treif, it's drabonim. Treif is drabon. Also treifs up kalim. Another Shem say no. Bishul Acham is not treif. You're not allowed to eat it, but it's not treif. It means you as a gavra. It's a lom de shem. You're not allowed to eat it. The gezeira, the rabbanim, mishum chasla, they didn't hear. But there's nothing wrong with the food. Said, so what are you afraid of? You're afraid that you're going to, let's say for example, you have a pot that had Bishul Acham in it, and then a Jew went in and cooked some soup in that pot. So now, I'm going to taste the soup. Ah, those geshmak of bliyas back from the pot that the non-Jew made. I'm going to marry his daughter because of those bliyas in the pot. He said, obviously the reason doesn't apply to bliyas, doesn't apply to taste absorbed in the walls of a pot. On the other hand, it's true the reason doesn't apply, but we've already seen time and time again, the reason not apply doesn't always translate to mean the din doesn't apply. So this is part of a loaded question about, do you really view Bishul Acham as a cheftza from Machos Asuras b'drabanan, or not really? You know, Lemaisa, we try to be machmer in this. What I tell people is like this. If you have a one-time thing, you know, the guy came and they messed up a pot, messed up a spoon or something. So the yes is yes, you try to cash it. That would be the more appropriate thing to do. Well, sometimes people ask me, sometimes like Talmidim come to me and they say, we just learned the whole shiur from you about Bishul Acham, and we realized that there's a lot of Bishul Acham going on in our house. So I say to them, okay, so Mekala Haba, explain to you, someone should turn on the fire, someone should do something, whatever. So I say, but Rebbe, what about all our entire silverware, our entire pots of bed that have been using Bishul Acham for the last 20 years? So, you go tell a guy, he's got to go tell his parents that they have to go kasha their entire kitchen because of Bishul Acham. So you have to be careful. You have to know who you're talking to in that kind of a setup. So the answer to the question is, the kelim have to be kasha for his Bishul Acham. The question, it's a machlokes. It's a question. So if you're able to and it's not such a big deal, so then the probably more correct thing to do is to kasha them. If for whatever reason it's very, very difficult and it's not biyolcho exactly to do it, so there definitely are those who will make that the Batsir of the basis role and those other kind of coolers. So there's a little bit of a cooler. The Ramah has a line when he writes that a person walks by and they say, Gaval, there's a guy cooking in the house. So Ramah writes, it's usually not a problem because inevitably a Jew probably stirred the food somewhere along the way. Ramo was talking about, not our pots and pans. Ramo was talking about where there was a big fire, you know, in the middle of the kitchen, and everyone walks by and gives a little bit of, so sticks the head in and moves around, you know. So then you could probably be suffering, probably a Jew put this by a little bit. Come on. If the non-Jew is cooking in the kitchen and you've never touched the fire in the last 20 years, your wife won't let you anywhere near into the kitchen. Oh, Mistam, I probably stirred the pot at one time. So again, you have to be careful before you invoke that crew. Okay, stop here.